Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Michelle Levine, Outreach Director for the most important environmental organization in Israel, the Society for the Protection of Nature. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I always love this edition of Two Jewish, which I tend to title, at least in my own mind, the Summer Camp Show. Somehow, when we get to the middle of June, it's time to start thinking about leaving town, or at least sending your kids away and journeying outward and onward. It's hot, really hot now, and officially, summer starts this coming week, so it must be time to play the immortal, eternally entertaining cut from the late great comedian Alan Sherman about kids going off to summer camp. Here it is, an annual tradition on Two Jewish for the past nearly 10 years, believe it or not. The classic tune, Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining, and they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner? He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors hate the waiters, and the lake has alligators. And the head coach wants no sissies, so he reads to us from something called Ulysses. Now I don't want this should scare you, but my bunkmate has malaria. You remember Jeffrey Hardy? They're about to organize a searching party. Take me home, oh Mudda Fada, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home, I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay. I've been here one whole day. Dearest Fada, darling Mudda, how's my precious little brother? Let me come home if you miss me. I would even let Aunt Bertha hug and kiss me. Wait a minute, it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing, playing baseball. Gee, that's better. Mudda Fada, kindly disregard this letter.
There's something about summer camp that never changes. While Alan Sherman isn't only talking about Jewish summer camp, which is one of the better ways to try to make sure your children and grandchildren stay Jewish, he is describing an experience that so many of us have had, leaving home for cooler climates and different customs and traditions with a bunch of kids we never met before. And that homesickness he describes with great humor is a very real thing. One we all overcame and had a great time, whether it was for a week or a summer or every summer of our youth. It's also time for vacation, and lots of us are heading out to enjoy the wide world outside of our home cities and towns. One of the great unsuspected pleasures of traveling is the chance to explore Jewish sites and living Jewish communities in far-flung places. I can assure you that Jews have lived pretty much everywhere and have active synagogues in places you might never imagine we would have them. And it's always worthwhile and often surprisingly gratifying to go out and find Jewish communities to pray with, to meet people, to see the remarkable places Jews have created in the far corners of our world. You can find Jewish places almost everywhere you go. Well, not so much Antarctica, and I'm not sure about Fiji, but almost everywhere else. Look up Jewish travel online and just make sure you call ahead if you're going to a temple. In today's world, many of the places around the world require advance information on who is coming for security reasons. I can tell you lots of stories about, half an hour of being grilled to make sure I really just wanted to pray, so call ahead. Today is also Father's Day, a hallmark faux festival if ever one existed, but since my family, under the direction of my very lovely wife Wendy, has done a fantastic job of celebrating this greeting card holiday with food and gifts and many hugs, here's a classic Yiddish song dedicated to Dad, an interesting pop jazzy version of Oh My Papa, which Eddie Fisher made famous a long time ago, this time sung by Eleanor Risa.
Oh, mein Papa, is given mein Malach. Vorbei der Tag, wenn ich bin gesessen, nur lief sein Scheuß. In mit der Kisch verbitten meine Tränen mit Lachen.
That was Oh My Papa, a Yiddish classic. Fathers are important figures in all cultures, of course, but for Jews, the concept of the father has perhaps some extra importance. For example, the beginning of the central prayer in every service is called the Avot, the prayer for the fathers, and it includes a text that praises God for being the God of our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. From the time of the Talmud, at least 1,600 years ago, every Jewish prayer service has included this central evocation of, well, dads. Fathers are given special honor in other ways in Judaism as well. The Ten Commandments focus on honoring father and mother. The Gemara spends time debating whether the honor due your father is greater than even the honor due to your teacher. I remember raising that question at a temple retreat on ethics once, explaining that teachers, including but not limited to rabbis, are supposed to be shown great honor at all times, and so are fathers. So, whom should you honor more, your father or your rabbi? My then 7-year-old son, he's now 16, his name is Boaz, raised his hand. I called on him for his analysis of this complex ethical question. "Well, what if your father is also your rabbi?" he asked, pretty much ending that discussion in laughter. We hear a lot about Jewish mothers in our culture, but not very much about Jewish fathers. Perhaps that's a mistake. You know the famous joke, a boy comes home from school and says, "Mom, I was cast in the school play." "What's your role?" she asks. "I'm the Jewish father," he answers. "You go right back and tell the teacher you want a speaking part." That's not really how it works, in truth. Fathers play a central role, teaching both sons and daughters about Judaism and morality, making the great traditions of our people meaningful and fresh in this and every generation. It's both the place of the father and his responsibility, and that's a pretty important part in any and every family, every mishpacha. So, happy Father's Day, and may all you fathers out there get just what you want from your kids today. Which, for most of us, is not a tangible gift at all, not a barbecue mitt or a book or a baseball bat or whatever. It is the love of our children we seek, and most of the time, at least, their respect. Our guest this morning knows more about preserving and protecting the environment in Israel more than just about anyone you will ever meet. Michelle Levine is the outreach director for a wonderful organization, the Society for the Protection of Nature in Israel, which combines elements of the Sierra Club, the National Wildlife Federation, and the National Park Service, all without any government funding. Find out how they manage to work to protect and preserve the natural resources of a very small, very important, and very vulnerable country that also matters very much to Jews everywhere in the world, Israel. When we come back on Too Jewish in just a few moments.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. When I was in junior high school, the best kisser in the 8th grade was Julie Mills. How did I know she was the best? Well, the truth is, I didn't. Because I was pretty shy back then, and including Julie, I only kissed a total of 2 girls. But to me, with my limited experience, Julie was the best. My point is, we almost never know when something is really the best, because we haven't experienced everything else. And so it is with pizza. Sure, every day we hear Mama's Pizza is the best. It feels good to hear it, but still, we don't relax and take it for granted. After all, we're competing with a lot of pizzas out there. So, if you haven't tried Mama's Pizza yet, we humbly invite you to do it today. We believe you will think it's the best, and you'll remember it forever. Just like I remember kissing Julie Mills. Mama's Pizza, with 4 convenient locations. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We welcome our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Michelle Levine. She works for the Society for the Protection of Nature in Israel, the largest and most important organization dealing with Israeli environment and society. For the last 8 years, she published SPNI News, the largest distribution publication worldwide on Israel's nature and environment. Good morning. Welcome to Too Jewish.
Boker Or.
Boker Or. Tell us, most Americans, I think even American Jews, don't know what the Chevra LeHaganat HaTeva is, and yet it's a very important organization in Israel. Just start by introducing it to us.
Okay, well, first of all, SPNI, as it's some Americans even think of it as SPINI, SPNI, the Society for the Protection of Nature in Israel, was established in 1953 by wildlife biologists and nature lovers who were shocked and horrified at the idea of draining the Hula Swamp, the Hula wetlands, which were the second largest at the time wetlands in the Middle East. And they were going to be drained for the purpose of reducing the threat from malaria and also to create agricultural farmlands. However, there really wasn't a threat from malaria at the time in Israel. And as a result of the draining of the Hula wetlands, 12 species of birds became extinct. And that's really on our shoulders, the Jewish people, which is a shocking kind of revelation for me to discover. And because actually, eventually, the SPNI failed in their campaign to prevent the draining of the Hula Swamp in the 1950s. But they were so passionate about it, and they realized the significance of this. And I'd like to explain to you the significance of this to bird life worldwide. And because they recognized the significance, and they wanted everyone in Israel to recognize the significance, they continued this campaign for the next 40 years. And in the early 90s, sections of the Hula, some 10% of those lands were reflooded, and a lot of the birds have come back. And some of the birds that were nearing extinction that were endangered are coming back, and which is really exciting. And I think that definitely the people in Israel are today realizing our stewardship to the land and to wildlife and our specific, unique responsibility to birds.
You know, it's fascinating. I really had never heard of the Society for Protection of Nature in Israel until I was living there. And suddenly, you know, everybody said, oh, it's this great group. They're kind of like park rangers in the United States. That's not exactly a perfect analogy, but maybe it'll help our listeners a little bit. There are a number of different areas besides the Hula wetlands that the SPNI works. Can you talk about kind of the broader mission?
Yes. SPNI is by far the largest environmental nonprofit organization in Israel. And so our focuses are very diverse. And I'll give you a little bit of an overview. We have, first of all, we're not really the park rangers, but in the 1960s, I believe, SPNI, working in tandem with JNF, SPNI scientists identified the lands that we would like to see reserved as nature reserves and national parks. And we persuaded the state of Israel to establish the nature reserves and national parks, and eventually persuaded them to establish the Nature and Parks Authority, which was originally called something else. But today it's called the Israel Nature and Parks Authority. So, but we helped establish all the national parks and nature reserves. At every nature reserve, we have what's called a field school, and the field schools are actually on nature reserve land in a place where there's no hotel or nowhere else to stay. And it's a little rustic, but you have 8 beds in a room. You do have a bathroom and a little kitchen in there, but you're actually in Engedi Field School, for example, you're actually overlooking the Engedi waterfalls and overlooking the Dead Sea, which is it's profound.
Really fantastic
it's
place, a prof- field school there.
Really profound, like overwhelming view where you feel the sense of God as you're, you know, looking at the view, and you're just like, wow, this is the beauty of Israel. It's a powerful, powerful moment from the Engedi Field School. And there's ibex walking in front of your room, and all the field schools are like this. It's also very, very cheap. It's, you know, like something like $100 a night, and you can bring your whole family there. So the field schools are one of our areas. The ecotourism is one of the areas. Another area is birds, of course. And another is education. We are the biggest environmental educators in the state of Israel. And our programs reach some 50% of school children in Israel, which is unbelievable. And that's partially because it's funded by the Ministry of Education. So we're our program, Beautiful Israel, which is funded by many American groups like Schusterman and Pratt. A Beautiful Israel is a litter cleanup group, and many, you know, English speakers who go to Israel are horrified by the litter, how people litter more commonly than in America. And they always say, you know, one of the things you people should work on, environmentalists, is take care of that litter problem. That's right. A disaster. Well, so as part of the education program of Beautiful Israel, we're teaching about littering and basic respect for the land. So those litter cleanups, that's one program. Another, in addition to the education, which is huge, we also have We also have an Environmental Protection Division, and that's the focus of SPNI, is the Environmental Protection Division, which is really interested in protecting the land of Israel.
We will talk much more about that and the field schools and everything that SPNI, the Society for the Protection of Nature in Israel, does when we come back on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. A couple of other thoughts about Father's Day today. While Jewish tradition certainly highlights our responsibility to our parents, you know, as I said, it's the Ten Commandments that direct us to honor our father and mother, and God commanded those a mere 3,200 years ago, the modern celebration of Father's Day was only made official by presidential proclamation by Lyndon Johnson in 1966, and it didn't become a national holiday until Richard Nixon signed it into law in 1972. Apparently, there was an attempt to make it a national holiday way back around the same time as Mother's Day made it on the calendar, but no such luck. Moms are still just flat out more popular. Well, in any case, Father's Day really is a recent addition to the festival calendar, and as a father and a son, I have to admit that I think the best way you can honor your father or be honored as a father is every day, not just the third Sunday in June. Now, if I can just convince my kids of that. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Weintraub Israel Center, talking to us right now from Ra'anana, Israel. Boker Tov, Guy.
Boker Tov, Rabbi. How are you today?
I'm well, although actually it's evening in Israel, so it's a little false morning here. The Israeli scouts are here while you're there. Tell us about them.
Yeah, the Israeli scouts are sending to Tucson their friendship caravan, which is a group of 10 Israeli scouts, Hatzofim, who bring Israel to us through songs, dance, stories. They are 16 and 17 years old. They will be arriving in Tucson on the 21st. They'll be doing a performance at the JCC, free and open for all, at 6 o'clock. And it is an amazing opportunity to meet those young, energetic Israelis, five girls, five boys. They really bring the combination of current Israel with a lot of flavors into it, a lot of fun, a lot of celebrity. And the bare existence of this caravan is something very special because, you know, it's hard to think about a group of that young teenagers that are going, renting with one adult or two adults a car and actually traveling all across the state from one Jewish community to the other, bringing current Israel with this amazing energy. They're coming to our community every year, and it's always an amazing performance. Later on, they will be hosted by local Tucsonians, you know, to give them a little bit of a family-like atmosphere. And in a sense, that's what makes the Jewish people so special, because at the end of the day, we're all one big family, one big happy family, and, you know, we're part of the same tribe. So that's it about the scouts. You know, that's the amazing thing about it.
You know, kind of like what we say about Israel, one big, happy, dysfunctional family.
Exactly. Although I must admit that the scouts kind of prove that there is a way to function. I don't know
Very
how they
nice.
Do it, but they just do it.
Maybe it's their youth and energy and idealism. God bless them. Thanks, Guy. We will talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we started talking about the Hungarian Jewish community last week, focused on Budapest, the Dohain Synagogue, really quite an extraordinary community. Let's keep going on that.
So, yeah, I mean, you know that Budapest was one of the twin capitals of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, so it was always the big sort of Hauptstadt of Hungarian Jewry. But there were many secondary cities that had rich communal lives of their own and constructed absolutely gorgeous synagogues, some of which are still in use by very much reduced communities, some of which are now museums, and a couple of which are used for other things but can still be visited and clearly were designed as synagogues. Among the places I would recommend to tourists for several reasons, but if somebody's visiting Hungary, it's a shame to see only Budapest. In the south, near the border with Serbia, is a wonderful town called Szeged, gorgeous synagogue, and they specialize in fish soup with freshwater fish from the Danube, so that's worth going for.
Absolutely.
There's another city called Miskolc that had a huge Jewish community, a lot of communal institutions still functioning, a synagogue worth visiting, and also Debrecen. Now, these are cities that are still in Hungary, and as some of your listeners may know, Hungary is sort of a rump country now. It's what's left after the Treaty of Trianon, which is the Hungarian version of the Treaty of Versailles. All the defeated powers in World War I got their borders cut, and lots of their people ended up living in other countries. So there are huge Hungarian minorities on territory that used to be part of Hungary, but is now part of Slovakia or Ukraine or Romania or Serbia. And this is all Europeans recognize a potential source of conflict that the European Court of Human Rights and the OSCE and European Union and other institutions work to diffuse by protecting the rights of Hungarian minorities in these neighboring countries, which all used to be, or parts of these countries, which used to be part of Hungary. So if you want to visit sort of what historically was Jewish Hungary, there are very important Jewish institutions and buildings and synagogues in all these outlying areas, like the town where my grandparents lived as children, which was Ungvar in Hungarian, is now Uzhhorod in the Ukraine. It's a perfect example, but there are many other examples. And I would encourage any of your listeners who have an interest in Hungarian Jewry to step outside Budapest at least and go to one or more of these secondary cities. And also, even if they have no special interest in Hungarian Jewry, if you want to see Hungary or the Czech Republic today and you only see the capital, you get a really distorted idea of what's going on. So I encourage people to venture out a bit.
Like going to the United States and only seeing Washington, D.C.
Exactly.
Wouldn't quite capture it. Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. One day out in the woods, a Jewish hiker suddenly sees a giant grizzly bear. The bear sees him too and starts to chase him. The guy manages to escape for a while, but finally the giant bear corners him. Giving up hope, knowing he is about to be eaten, the man begins to chant the Shema, the last words a Jew says before death. To his shock, the bear stops, freezes, and then the bear begins to recite Hebrew back to him. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the world. The man is overjoyed. What are the odds he would be chased by a Jewish bear? God is so good. How lucky he is. He's going to live. The hiker is about to say the Birkat HaGomel, the prayer of gratitude for his salvation, when he hears the bear's final words. Hamotzi lechem min haaretz. thank you, God, who brings me delicious food to eat. That was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week, special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week, our portion Korach features drama and tragedy, rebellion and punishment. In last week's Parsha, the people of Israel arrived at the borders of the Promised Land just 2 years after leaving Egyptian slavery, but a team of spies came back with a poor report. We aren't strong enough to conquer the land. A lack of faith lay at the heart of the problem, and God decided that this generation would never be able to come into the Holy Land, would have to live in the Sinai for 38 more years until they all died, and a new generation, fresh with the optimism of youth and untainted by slavery and its mentality, could come forward. Stung by the sentence of death in the desert, at the start of this week's portion, a group of rebels under the leadership of a priest, a Levite named Korach, challenges the control of Moses and Aaron. Born into the same tribe as Moses, Korach is an insider rebelling against his own kin. "Who are these guys, Moses and Aaron, to take on the authority of ruling over us?" he asks. He claims that they have arrogated to themselves powers that should truly belong to the people. In their place, he proposes placing a much more democratically appointed dictator, himself, to lead the people. Korach's faux populist rebellion threatens the very foundation of Israelite leadership. For if the God of liberation is not at the heart of this enterprise, it's all a matter of personal ego and self-aggrandizement. And then we might as well go back to Egypt and live as slaves, as some Israelites now propose to do. But Korach dissembles. He actually lies about Moses' motivations. Moses clearly had no great desire for his high office, but he has held it as a sacred trust given to him by God. In rebellion, Korach threatens not Moses' authority, but God's. Our Torah portion tells us that in order to determine the ongoing leadership of Israel, a great outdoor display is conducted. The net result is that Korach and his followers are destroyed by God, and Moses and Aaron are fully vindicated. It's always nice when God steps in and has your back. The abiding lesson is that a Judaism that doesn't base itself in humility and reverence for God, which is focused on personal gain and power politics, will fail. Only through faith, dedication to ideals, and devotion to the higher purposes of Jewish ethics and meaning can we reach our own promised land. When we come back on Two Jewish, our guest, Michelle Levine, will explain how Israel works to take care of its own environment and what it does when it fails to do so. Find out about its successes and its challenges when we return on Two Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Obama in Washington, Israeli President Shimon Peres called for renewal of peace talks with the Palestinians. Israel and the Palestinians are ripe today to restart peace talks, Peres said at the White House ceremony last week. A firm basis already exists, a solution of two national states, a Jewish state Israel, an Arab state Palestine. The Palestinians are our closest neighbors. I believe they may become our closest friends. Well, maybe. Peace talks have been stalled since 2010, with the Palestinians demanding a freeze of Israeli building in the West Bank and Jerusalem, among other things, and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu insisting on no preconditions. Peres, who holds the ceremonial office of president, addressing about 140 dignitaries in the White House East Room, also thanked Obama for pressuring Iran to end its nuclear weapons program. "Mr. President, you worked hard to build a world coalition to meet this immediate threat," Peres said. "You started, rightly, with economic sanctions. You made it clear, rightly again, that all options are on the table." Obama emphasized peacemaking in his own remarks. "Shimon knows that a nation's security depends not just on the strength of its arms, but upon the righteousness of its deeds, its moral compass," he said. "He knows, as Scripture teaches, that we must not only seek peace, we must pursue it. And so it has been the cause of his life, peace, security, and dignity for Israelis and Palestinians and all Israel's Arab neighbors." Israeli authorities, in other news, detained dozens of African migrants in pre-dawn raids last week in the first major step towards deportation of 4,500 people who have entered the country illegally. The arrests were the harshest move yet against migrants, reflecting growing concern about the effect on Israel of tens of thousands of Africans who have sneaked into the country across the porous Egyptian border in recent years. Israeli leaders have grown increasingly alarmed by the influx, calling it a burden and a threat to the country's Jewish character. Interior Ministry spokeswoman Sabine Haddad said 55 people, including 45 from South Sudan, were rounded up in last week's raids, which took place in several towns across the country. The crackdown came in the wake of a landmark court decision that cleared the way for the expulsion of 4,500 illegal migrants. The order applies only to people who come from nations that have friendly relations with Israel, ironically, mostly from the newly established state of South Sudan. These people represent only a small percentage, however, of the estimated 60,000 Africans now in Israel. Some of them claim asylum, but others are simply looking for work in a relatively prosperous country, actually quite a prosperous country, because many are from Sudan, an enemy of Israel, and Eritrea, a country with a flawed, well, terrible human rights record. The line between refugees and economic migrants has become blurred. Israel has quietly allowed most migrants from these two countries to stay without processing their asylum applications. Continued arrival of the Africans and the legal uncertainty have now spurred action. Israel is building a fence along its Egyptian border to halt the influx, and it has begun work on a detention center in the Negev. The government has begun imposing penalties on businesses that employ unauthorized immigrants, and this week it announced that in addition to the detention center, it plans to build a tent city to hold 20,000 new migrants. Interior Minister Eli Yishai, who oversees immigration policy, said that the first group of South Sudanese, about 100 people, will be sent home this week. "We, the Jewish people, are sensitive to every refugee, but refugees only," he said. "We cannot allow ourselves to flood the country with infiltrators and migrants." In other news, this summer at the London Olympics will mark the 30th anniversary of the horrible Palestinian terror attack on the Munich Games in 1972. There's been a great deal of pressure exerted to have the International Olympic Committee acknowledge the terrible tragedy at those games with a moment of silence in memory of the Israeli athletes murdered by the Palestinians, but to date the IOC has refused to do so. It's not exactly clear why the Olympic Committee has been so reluctant to face its responsibilities, but it is consistent with the way that the often corrupt Olympic organizers have dealt with the terrorist acts of Arab Palestinians that shocked the world and murdered 11 Israeli athletes before the entire world's view in 1972. A moment of silence seems a small enough gesture for the Olympic hype machine to offer, especially because silence in the face of brutal murder has long been the IOC's response to this injustice and the immorality perpetrated by the Palestinian Arabs. The building media pressure will likely not reverse the Olympic Committee's decision, I don't think, but it again emphasizes that the Olympics are a political movement and are motivated by politics, not sports or human accomplishment. Shame on the IOC for continuing to deny the murder of those Israelis 30 years ago, and shame on the world for continuing to perpetuate the myth that somehow it's inappropriate to recognize the worst thing that ever happened at the world's largest sporting competition. In more positive Jewish sports news, former captive Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit has been named sports columnist for the Israeli daily Yediot Achronot. Shalit is a sports fan of basketball and the Maccabi Tel Aviv team in particular. His first column appeared last week. Shalit is now in the U.S. to cover the NBA Finals between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Miami Heat. Gilad Shalit was released last October, just after Yom Kippur, by Hamas after more than 5 years of captivity in the Gaza Strip. And finally, actor David Arquette had a kind of bar mitzvah at the Kotel, the Western Wall in Jerusalem, last week while visiting Israel to film a new show for the Travel Channel. David Arquette, who was born to a Jewish mother but not really raised Jewish, was at the wall attending another bar mitzvah ceremony when he was invited to step up and have one himself. He decided to have the rite in front of the sacred site. Arquette was in Israel to film Mile High. He tweeted later, "I had my bar mitzvah today at the wall. Finally, I'm a man." Well, if you follow the actor's career in life, you know that the hope is that he'll finally start to act like one. And that's the news of Jews around the world.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Michelle Levine. She is the outreach director for the American Society for the Protection of Nature in Israel, the SPNI, as it's called sometimes, so the Chevra Lahaganat HaTeva. Did I get it right this
very
time?
Very good.
Working on getting it. There's all these little things in Hebrew. She was the marketing and PR manager of the Society of Protection of Nature in Israel in Tel Aviv for 8 years and published the best read, most important publication on the environment and Israel for about 8 years, SPNI News. So for an American who thinks of, comes from a background of, you know, Jewish National Fund, and we planted, you know, we drained the swamps, we planted the forests in Israel, Eretz Yisrael Yafa, the land of Israel is beautiful. And the perception of sort of the early Zionist dream of really kind of conquering and rebuilding the land.
Yes.
Is that a major transformation, and has it been a major transformation in Israeli thought from, we're going to take this land which was awful and make it green, into, well, wait a minute, it's a little more complex place than that?
Yes, it is more complex. I think, first of all, you built the land in 60 years. Wow, that's amazing. But
it is amazing.
You did it at the expense of, let's just openly allow dumping of toxic chemicals into the rivers and streams of Israel until they're so toxic that, like at the Maccabi Games disaster, the Yarkon River, you enter the water and you're dead on contact with the water because they openly allow dumping. And, you know, the trees of Israel, that it's so amazing that we reforested Israel, and that, you know, and that they call it, the reforestation of the country has actually reversed the desertification effect. And, you know, and you have a different kind of topography in certain places in Israel than was there even in the times in biblical times. But you did today, those forests, those trees you planted that you have a certificate for on your wall, is that tree still there? If you're not a member of ASPNI, then I would worry about your tree. I would seriously be concerned about your tree. Think about the fact that for your bar mitzvah, a tree was planted, Rabbi Kohan. I'm ready to bet on it.
Yep.
Ready to bet on it right now.
Yeah, and a lot of paper printed on poor destroyed trees described all the trees that were planted in Israel on my behalf when I turned 13. That's correct.
All right, so now say a real estate developer who was buddies with Ehud Olmert when he was the mayor of Jerusalem
right?
Wanted to cut down, I don't know, 5 million of those trees that, you know, were in the particular forest where your tree was planted. And who do you think is going to protect that forest and stop it now that Mayor Ehud Olmert is now prime minister? And he's not currently, but he was then prime minister of the state of Israel when the plan that he approved to cut down 6 miles of those trees, when he was now prime minister of Israel, and it was now the same plan was now 10 years later reaching the National Planning Council, and he's now prime minister of Israel. What organization is going to fight to protect those trees?
Well, it's probably not the Jewish National Fund.
It's only ASPNI, the only organization that really has the ability to stand up to the Israeli government and say, we need to build Israel today in a sustainable manner. You know, one, when we were just building everything wildly, let's throw everything up as quickly as possible. Let's build a state. That's great. But, you know, now it's 2012. And now I think we, the Jewish people, we can build in a smart way. We can do things in a smart way. And it's time to do things in a smart way. And that SPNI, unlike, you know, environmental groups that you may know about in Tucson that are trying to protect a single owl and that you feel like you can't identify with, because I don't care about that owl. I was going to buy a house in that accomplishment, you know, that subdevelopment. Well, we're not really fighting. We're not really fighting for a single owl. Most of the time, SPNI is saying, when we say, how about let's build here instead? We actually put forth a master building plan for where environmentalists and residents would not oppose building in Jerusalem. And we presented that to the National Planning Council and said, instead of cutting down the 6 miles of forest, let's build here instead. And there was an actual concrete building plan that architects and urban planners working for SPNI had spent 2 years building and working with residents to see what residents in each neighborhood would agree on. And so then the National Planning Council had to take a serious look at that and had to say, wow, you know, maybe we should build here instead if this is going to be more sustainable in the long term.
So let's talk a little bit about where the funding comes from the Society for the Protection of Nature in Israel, for this terrific SPNI organization, which has worked, you know, in funny ways at a very fundamental level to do some of the environmental stuff that we assume in the United States and also some stuff that we're not doing in the United States. How is that funded? Because if it was funded by the government, then you would think the government would influence its choices and policy choices.
No, it's not funded by the government. But although, you know, certainly our environmental education programs are. Actually, it's amazing. Some of the environmental education is funded by the Israel Electric Company. And, you know, in every case, the SPNI, which are very hardcore idealists, say, we're not going to not oppose the Israel Electric Company if you do something wrong. And we've run campaigns against them in the same year that they were supporting our programs. And they were very good natured about it. And they actually improved their power plant, the Reading power plant in Tel Aviv, that we wanted to shut down because they were burning coal there. And now they're burning a cleaner form of energy, which is important because Tel Aviv has worse air pollution than any city in Europe. And Jerusalem has worse air pollution than Tel Aviv. So Jerusalem, the holy city, actually has worse air pollution than any city in Europe. And this is sort of a fiasco. This is why we need Americans to pay for membership for ASPNI and make a commitment to be a lifelong member of the ASPNI at ASPNI.org. And by doing so, hopefully protecting Israel and making it a safe place to live. But where our money is coming from now is mostly from Israelis. We have 100,000 members in Israel. Every single Israeli knows about SPNI. Israelis are, you know, you can ask any Israeli. SPNI is the future of Israel, the green future, a sustainable future of Israel. And many of the foundations even that support SPNI are in Israel. We have actually gotten money from JNF in the United States, JNF in the UK, among many, many, many other foundations here in the United States and abroad. But the majority of the funding, the 90% of the funding, I think it's fair to say, yes, about 90% or more of the funding
comes
for SPNI comes from Israel. And that is the problem for that is that we are not powerful enough. We are not strong enough. And we need American support because we are the watchdogs. We have actually an environmental expert sitting at every regional planning council meeting. And you want us sitting there because you want our people finding out what's going to happen here. Are we going to allow gas drilling in a new experimental way where right next to a residential area?
Right.
In Israel, if you're Moshe and you're friends with Yaakov from the army, and Yaakov is on the regional planning council, and you're the guy who wants to do some new experimental technique that's not being approved in the U.S. or Russia or any other country, but you know what? Why not try it in Israel? It's easier to get things through there if you were army buddies with so-and-so. And that's the danger in Israel, is that that's how things have been run until now, how we advanced the development so quickly and so rapidly, which is amazing. But now you really need the watchdog on every regional planning council, on every local planning council. What is going to happen? What is being done? And let's make sure it's done in a sustainable way. I think SPNI is very well known in Israel for not opposing development, for not being an extremist on any matter, but for being, we are extremists on the point of sustainability. Let's do things in a smart way. And that's where we are really making things happen and winning environmental victories instead of just constantly complaining or fighting against something. Because every time we're suggesting a concrete sustainable alternative, people are saying, this is the smart way to do things.
There have been some environmental successes in Israel. You know, I rode a bike along the Yarkon Park now, and while the Yarkon, I wouldn't drink the water from that river now. It is certainly a whole lot cleaner than it used to be. What helped to influence some of the changes?
Well, I think it's wonderful that, you know, we now have a Ministry of Environmental Protection. This is not the equivalent of the EPA in the United States. And some people might say the EPA has too much power. Some people might say the EPA is corrupt. The Ministry of Environmental Protection, I do not believe they are corrupt. I think it is a good organization, but they are not powerful enough. And they say they have the formal right to protect the rivers and streams from being dumped in, but they're not actually given any way to enforce it.
They don't have the funding to have enforcement.
That's the problem. We really need, I think at this point in 2012, we can no longer openly allow dumping into the streams and rivers of Israel. And, you know, one thing that was a great environmental victory for Israel is Arik Sharon. He was a fantastic environmental prime minister for the state of Israel, possibly the best. He was really good. And one of the reasons that he was good, I like to give credit to his son, Omri Sharon, who is now sort of discredited in Israel. But Omri Sharon was the head of the Environmental Committee in Knesset. And he really was like the person who built that committee up from nothing. And if you would say that there is environmental action happening in Knesset now, it is really because of the organization that was built by Omri Sharon. And he had a lot of influence with his father. And that's why we have Park Ariel Sharon today, which was up for development, the park that's three times larger than Central Park in New York City and adjacent to Tel Aviv by Har Haria, which was the big landfill. And, you know, that park is just amazing. And you're right, Hayarkon Park is also another beautiful victory that I think we can give. There, you know, there are some good things happening in the Israeli government, and I definitely would credit...
Yes, a few. No, just a few,
no,
but there are some good things.
When it comes to the environment, I really want to give them credit. You know,
absolutely.
I think things are going in a good direction, and that we need to give it a little push and a jump start so that we really can, you know, make things better. Because although I think that we're holding back the spread of evil air pollution, we're not actively improving the situation from where it is. And it's currently at the state that we're in New Jersey, which we know Israel is the size of New Jersey. But I don't think it's common knowledge that in terms of environment, Israel is as bad as New Jersey or worse.
Frightening fact, isn't it?
It is frightening. Is this the way we're showing God our respect for the
and
Holy Land?
Our stewardship over the
our
land
stewardship.
Of Israel.
That's right.
How can people find out more about protecting the environment in Israel? What's the website to go to?
Well, I would recommend first, of course, aspni.org. Okay. But I think that you
can... So it's aspni.org.
aspni.org for the American Society for the Protection of Nature in Israel. There's also a really lovely website called Green Prophet. And the Green Prophet for Israel has a fantastic...
That's Prophet,
P-R-O-P-H-E-T.
Great.
Yeah. Green Prophet, I think, for English language, besides the SPNI newsletter, is another wonderful online source of environmental issues all across the country from every environmental... Of course, the biggest environmental group after SPNI is smaller than our, you know, smallest department. So we work in network and partnership with all the other environmental groups in Israel. And I would say the next best organization is the IUED, the Israel Union for Environmental Defense, and the Heschel Center. These are very well-respected organizations in Israel by Israelis. And I think it's important for Americans to check out in organizations for themselves that they think about supporting in Israel, to go to Israel, see what's happening yourself firsthand, and to ask Israelis what they think of these organizations, because sometimes Americans support groups that are not doing very much in Israel. And I think that it's even if your donation is $54 a year,
right,
with ASPNI, you have a huge impact. And with any organization, you have a huge impact. So I think that we have responsibility as Israel lovers to make sure that $54 donation goes to the right organization that we have checked out thoroughly.
I want to thank Michelle Levine for a great visit here on Two Jewish. I can vouch for the Society of Protection of Nature in Israel. Really a terrific group. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Cohen.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Two Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. when our guest will be Professor Rachel Adler, one of the most important feminist voices in the Jewish world, and now a newly ordained Reform rabbi. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or from our TwoJewishRadio.com website, where you can stream them and like us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from Barbara Streisand for Father's Day, a very schmaltzy Papa, Can You Hear Me? There is a version out there from the cast of Glee, which has plenty of Jews in it too, but I think Streisand's is still better. My friends, happy Father's Day, and have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Papa, can you hear me? Papa, can you see me? Papa, can you find me in the night? Papa, are you near me? Papa, can you hear me? Papa, can you help me not be frightened? Looking at the skies, I seem to see a million eyes.